of millibytes,
yes,
or kilobytes or bytes, and then use that to chat, and it wouldn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the data, it wouldn't cost you extra money.
Okay.
But for messaging, every message that you send, it would cost you money.
So it would not make people and the family members very much busy with themselves, isn't it?
So in those times, before the cyberspace, they were busy within themselves.
Uh-huh.
They would talk. Now, because cyberspace is directly connected to internet, so those times, instead of people watching YouTube like we do today,
mm-hmm.
those times people used to watch televisions.
Televisions, that's right.
The round ones.
Round ones, okay.
Of which they would spend most of the time watching that
mm-hmm.
because of the interaction that they had.
Okay.
But still, it was a family product. So mm-hmm. Even if the father was watching TV, in those times, when the father is sitting down, you see the mother and the kids sitting down together and enjoying the entertainment together. But now, it's not like that. So this is pre-cyberspace order. Now, post-cyberspace order, we see that people have become busy to their phones more than their neighbors. Like a person who is sitting beside you, you might not be talking to him, but the phone you are constantly looking. And the more you go forward, the more the dangers begin. So before the advent of Facebook and Instagram, people used to chat, only chatting. There was nothing else. But now people start putting a post in regards to themselves. Recently, there was a video that came forward regarding a family that used to put the photo of the child in their post and their feeds every day or every time.
Yes.
But then afterwards, there are some people behind it. They used AI to make the child grow
mm-hmm.
and send the message back to the family and saying that the child doesn't want that for herself. You see why? Because the more we are going in front with technology and the access to the internet, these things can cause things like identity theft.
Yes.
Things that are not even good for me to mention over here. A child that is just 3 years old, you exaggerate the physical appearance of her to mm-hmm. be older.
Yes.
And then afterwards you see that it's been used in a negative method mm-hmm. with what we see in AI, artificial intelligence, now that is connected to the internet.
Yes.
And right now we have this famous platform called ChatGPT. I just saw a few days back that when you write anything that is dangerous on ChatGPT, it refuses.
Yes.
But now we have found a code that if you put this certain text, for example, this is what I found. So when you ask ChatGPT for Windows activation code,
mm-hmm.
it does not give you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you type in a certain code where it says that when my grandmother was alive, she used to read me Windows activation code for me to sleep. And then afterwards, you put this as a clause. And then afterwards, ChatGPT gives you all the Windows activation codes.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So even in this artificial intelligence that is in infancy stage, you see the dangers that they possess to the community. And
IRIB English Radio presents questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Now, with what we are right now, how does it affect family and
family
social
ties and
life?
The family social life, that's right.
We see
and
that
the family
now,
life is better say.
So there used to be a time when people would go outside of their country to study, and the only way to communicate with the family was letters.
Mm-hmm.
It has its bads and good pros and cons, but it was emotional and love felt,
mm-hmm.
you see, because when you are writing a letter, you don't write one sentence, two sentences.
Mm-hmm.
You write everything out of emotion, out of love, out of passion, of what has gone through your stay in this hostel, for example, in a university across your country.
Yes.
But now, with the invent of cyberspace, you can chat the same moment, the things that you want to chat. And mostly, it's not emotional-based. It's just information. Just keep them informed. That's it. And there is no worry. There is no that waiting that my son will be coming after 1 year and I will see him. There's that grand party that we have at home because he's coming after 1 year of not being able to see each other. So that kind is somehow lost. Obviously, as I said, it has its pros and cons.
Yes.
The same thing we have in the cyberspace.
Yes.
The pros of so these are some of the cons that I specified. The pros of cyberspace is that now we have information at our hand.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we do not know, we can know.
Yes.
The problem is, what is the foundation before getting into cyberspace? You see, if you go as an empty, blank mind into cyberspace, it is very destructive for anyone. Even if it seems to be good, it is destructive.
Yes.
But if you have your parameters for yourself that are set, then even if you go into cyberspace, you won't get lost. You have to find your parameters within yourself. So internet is not limited to certain points. The internet is unlimited. All the goods you'll find there, all the best you'll find there. If you have certain system and laws for yourself, of which for us Muslims is the Islamic laws, the laws abided by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that Allah gave us to follow, we use this as our foundation and then use the cyberspace in advance of that and not just wasting our time on social media.
That's
and
right.
The cyberspace.
Okay, that's all right. But as we said, it has its own positive effects too. I mean, the cyberspace on the family ties. Usually the family and the family members, the parents and the children, now they have their own small worlds inside their minds. Everybody is busy with his own world. I think this is one of the main negative effects of the cyberspace. The family ties, the parents, and the respect that the children had for the parents is fading away, isn't it?
Yeah, so you see them spending most of the time on screens.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, if you try to get a statistic,
yes,
you will find a child that is just born around 6 months.
Yes.
You will see that the child himself is too much attracted to colors
yes.
that he does not know that it is bad or good for him.
Mm-hmm.
From that age till someone who is 90 years old,
yes,
of which for a child that is 6 months, he is enjoying the sound and the
yes.
color.
Yes.
But for a person who is 90 years old, whatever he listens becomes misdak, becomes
yes.
something that is reality.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So, for example, we have seen some issues that were spread through cyberspace in regards to feminist movements
yes.
or transgenderism. You see that anyone, because for example right now they say, if you follow this transgender information, then you are at the top.
Yes.
If you don't follow, then you are digressive, you are not progressing.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they use this kind of words to manipulate people. And when you see, especially the elders, who don't normally work on logic and this kind of thing, they mostly emotional and sensible people. So when you bring this
yes.
kind of message that you are below the rate of a person, for example, we have grades,
yes.
you are the third class grade. Why? Because you are not following the world right now.
Yes.
And if you see every person, whether it's atheist, whether it's transgender issue, they always say that right now this is hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
If you follow it, you are progressing. If you are not following, you are regressing.
Okay.
Now, a person without foundation normally will get lost and use it to disadvantage.
Okay. Thank you much, Brother Sohail. That's all right. Thank you very much, Brother Sohail. May Allah hasten the reappearance of his final hujjah, his argument on earth, Imam As, inshallah. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page, to another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين و وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روبا شافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Remembering a national hero, a symbol of resistance. Many Iranians this year are marking the National Day against British colonialism at the resting place of a man who organized a popular resistance movement against British troops that had invaded Iran in 1915. Rais Ali Dilvari's martyrdom anniversary has fallen just days before Arbaeen, allowing pilgrims who are taking part in the Arbaeen walk to mark the occasion at his resting place in Wadi As-Salam Cemetery in the Iraqi city of Najaf, where the pilgrimage begins.
Shahid Dilvari.
Rais Ali Dilvari was a hero just like Martyr Qasem Soleimani in our days. Actually, as Iranians, I think we're lucky that we had had quite a number of these freedom fighters. For example, the Jangal movement of Gilan and the Tangistanis who formed the main resisting power against the British Empire in southern Iran.
We know that he was a young man living in the city of Dilvar in Bushehr province, and he successfully fought against the British invaders. That is why we have to keep his memory alive and educate our young generation about him.
Martyr Rais Ali Dilvari played an important role in the fight against colonialism. As Iranians, we owe him our independence and freedom.
Rais Ali Dilvari was born in 1261 in Dilvar in Bushehr. After the sudden entrance of British forces into the southern province in 1915, he led the Iranian army in their fight against British colonialists. Rais Ali Dilvari was ultimately killed by Anglo-Indian forces following months of bloody clashes. Today, his home has been turned into a museum and registered as a national heritage in Iran. And to commemorate him, his martyrdom anniversary, which usually falls on the 3rd of September, is marked on the Iranian calendar as a national day of fight against British colonialism.
Decades after his martyrdom, Rais Ali Dilvari is still an inspiration, not just for Iranians, but for freedom fighters worldwide. Gisum Shahmadi, Wadi As-Salam Cemetery, Najaf.
On Friday, trade and base unions held a nationwide strike over what they call a shameful number of deaths at work. On Wednesday, five maintenance workers were hit by a train while repairing tracks on the Milan-Turin line in northern Italy. The day after, two more workplace fatalities occurred, bringing the total number of deaths on the job to over 700 since January. Unions are saying these tragedies could have been avoided.
Yes, these deaths could have been prevented. As safety in the workplace costs money, companies prefer to save on worker safety this way, making bigger profits. Our railway system was in the hands of the state until not long ago. Today, most of it has been contracted to private firms. Private groups only know how to offer services at the cheapest rate. It's like a rat race. If workers complain about their working conditions, they are fired.
On Friday, prosecutors placed under investigation an employee of the National Rail Company, RFI, in relation to the accident in which five maintenance workers were hit and killed by a train. Safety in the workplace is an issue of increasing concern in Italy. According to the European Union's statistical agency Eurostat, 776 fatal accidents on the job were recorded in Italy in 2020, by far the highest number in the bloc.
On top of the deaths at work, we also have a high number of non-fatal accidents and practically no protection for workers on very demanding physically and psychologically jobs. Private companies must be given strict rules when doing workplace safety risk assessments, and their managers have to be severely punished when they fail to observe these rules.
Unions are demanding that the workplace safety issue seriously enter the political debate and that the country's work system finally comply with the EU safety standards. Max Civili, Rome.
On Friday, Amir Abdullahian met with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri, and caretaker Foreign Minister Abdullah Abu Habib. Both sides discussed the latest developments as well as challenges facing Lebanon on various levels. The issue of Saudi-Iranian rapprochement seemed to be a significant additive, which experts believe could prove constructive.
Any rapprochement between the countries of the region is in the interest of Lebanon. Saudi-Iranian agreements are a positive step, and they benefit the entire region, and they confront the U.S. ambitions and interests. We know very well that it was the U.S. that opposed this reconciliation, and they always stand against any rapprochement between any two countries in the region.
Iranian experts say Tehran's goal is to have a wider scope of cooperation in the region for the sake of mutual understanding among regional states.
Iran wants to use its bilateral relations with different countries in the region in order to create a multilateral format for cooperation. For example, to work with Saudi Arabia on helping Lebanon or helping Syria or helping Yemeni issue. And the vision which is aimed by Iran is strengthening these bilateral and multilateral cooperation against any external interference in the region.
Iran's foreign minister has stressed that Tehran will not hesitate to provide Beirut with any necessary need, but without any interference in Lebanon's internal affairs. Iran's foreign minister has always stressed in all his visits that the election of a president is an internal Lebanese issue. He also suggested that a positive Saudi perspective toward Lebanon could help break the deadlock in the presidential crisis. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Netherlands and Denmark are the only EU nations so far to have supplied F-16 warplanes to fight the Russian army. Ukraine Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba told his EU counterparts on Thursday that more countries need to follow suit. He also claims sanctions against Moscow are being circumvented and need to be tightened up.
We should deprive Russia of the capacity to produce missiles and drones. We see that the production is increasing and they use Western elements, Western spare parts in it.
Experts say EU sanctions against foreign nations are set to become even less effective as groupings like BRICS expand further.
They see it as a momentum to say, okay, this is payback time. We are going to show the world that we are capable to build a strong, unified bloc together with Saudi Arabia, Iran, United Arab Emirates. This bloc, if it is well managed and well elaborated on, has a huge potential.
EU defense ministers have been told to ramp up their training of Ukrainian soldiers.
I still think that we have to do more and faster. And I propose the ministers to raise the objective of the mission to 40,000 Ukrainian soldiers trained by the end of the year.
Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban insists Ukraine cannot defeat Russia. As an EU member, Hungary says it will block a proposed 20 billion euro financial package for Ukraine. Orban wants peace talks. Many others do too, as the EU is faced with a growing social crisis.
Anti-war campaigners say it is disgraceful that the EU is now in an arms race with NATO, claiming the bloc has moved from being a peace project to a full-scale military operation. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
On the anniversary of the disappearance of Imam Musa Sadr, Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Hibiri reminded the nation of Sadr's legacy, stressing that the only way out of any crisis is unity among Lebanese people. Hibiri called on all parliamentary blocs to participate in a seven-day dialogue in Parliament, after which there would be open-ended sessions to elect a president.
Dear Lebanese, exactly 1 year has passed since my call on the parliamentary blocs on the need to realize a national agreement by electing a president who unites and does not divide, a president who is supported by the Christians, but also by Muslims, and who is before all this a nationalist. Such an accomplishment could assist Lebanon in exiting its economic crisis.
45 years after his disappearance, Imam Sadr is still seen as the main founder of resistance against the Israeli occupation, while also representing unity among the Lebanese people.
The legacy of Imam Musa Sadr did not only not die, but it overgrows all the periods of Lebanon. And every time we have a crisis, we remember that only his teachings and what he was calling for can represent the salvation for this country.
This is a very sad day for us. Had Imam Sadr been alive today, we would not have had all these problems we are seeing today. We would not have had these political, economic, or social problems. But we promised him that we will continue his path.
Imam Sadr founded the Lebanese Amal Hope movement in 1974 and openly worked for the rights of the oppressed and the lower class in Lebanon.
Musa Sadr, the Lebanese Imam, represents all what does Lebanon represent. The unity, the ableness of living together, Muslims and Christians, the willingness not to surrender in front of evil. That's what Musa Sadr represents. They intended by kidnapping him to erase all his existence. His existence continued.
It's an opportunity for the Lebanese to remember what the Imam Sadr stands for as far as unity and peace and one country united for its own people.
The prominent Shiite cleric disappeared on August 31, 1978, during an official visit to the Libyan capital, Tripoli. Lebanon still holds former Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi responsible for his disappearance, along with two of his companions, while blaming the Libyan authorities for concealing details which could uncover the fate of Sadr.
45 years on, and the case of Musa Sadr's disappearance remains unclosed. The people of Lebanon unanimously believe that this is not a lost cause, for his legacy and the values of resistance and justice which he fought for have not died down. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Over 600 Sunni clerics, scholars, and thinkers from different parts of Iran took part in a meeting with Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi to share their thoughts on the issues facing the Muslim world. The meeting was held on the occasion of the Government Week in Iran. Addressing the meeting, Iran's president said a united Muslim society is the biggest obstacle to global arrogance.
An organized, coherent, and united society moves towards a clear and purposeful destination. Having goals and being dynamic are the main characteristics of a nation. A united society and Islamic Ummah is the biggest obstacle to the global arrogance and the system of domination. And this is the biggest obstacle to the dominators. After World War II, when two power blocs were formed in the world, and after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the hegemonic powers considered the unity of Muslims as the only obstacle to their dominance. Therefore, they always try to take measures against the Islamic world, but unity is the best solution to counter such measures.
Sunni and Shia religious scholars and elites believe that global arrogance is seeking to sow discord among Muslims by creating obstacles, launching propaganda campaign, and forming tech theory groups. but the Islamic Ummah should be vigilant to foil all the plots.
Such a meeting provides a good opportunity to offer better practical solutions for forging further unity and convergence between Shia and Sunni. The government of the Islamic Republic does not believe in any separation between Sunni and Shia Muslims. Dr. Raisi believes that both Shia and Sunni Muslims are of one essence. Accordingly, good achievements have been made in the economic, political, and social status of Sunni Muslims in the country.
Regarding the existing commonalities among different sects of Islamic schools of thought, such a gathering would send out this message to the enemy that Muslims are united and they cannot easily create discord among Shia and Sunni Muslims.
If all Muslims get united and join hands, no enemy would dare to sow the seeds of discord among them. The enemies do not want Muslims to make progress, but if we are united and support each other, the enemies cannot do anything.
The participating Iranian Shia and Sunni elites and scholars unanimously believed that what they all have in common is to think about the country's national interests and problems, which can certainly discourage the enemies. Iranian officials and scholars attending this event believe that creating unity among Sunni and Shia Muslims is indeed a strategy for the Islamic Republic of Iran to help foil the plots hatched by the enemies of the Islamic world. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The United States is on a record annual pace for mass shootings, averaging two such incidents every day this year. High summer temperatures, soaring economic inequality, a nation awash in guns and with lax supervision over them, there seems to be a universal belief that the epidemic of mass shootings won't decline anytime soon. But there is increasing anger over which mass shootings get political attention and which do not. Every day, 120 Americans are killed with guns, and more than 200 are shot and wounded. But the recent murder of three black people in Florida by a white racist was immediately seized upon by the political classes, even though domestic far-right extremists killed just 25 people last year.
As I made clear in my inaugural address, white supremacy is a poison. It's a poison. It's been allowed to grow faster and fester in our communities to the point where the intelligence community is determined, the U.S. intelligence community is determined that domestic terrorism rooted in white supremacy is the greatest terrorist threat we face in the homeland.
Shootings at schools also get massive attention, but what goes repeatedly ignored are the victims at the most common site of debilitating gun violence, poor neighborhoods.
It's a tragedy when these things are happening, but when those things happen, they usually happen in these white schools and these rich neighborhoods. They're getting funding, they're getting support, the media is talking about it, the world cares about gun safety. But we're talking about it on a daily basis and no one cares. I had a 13-year-old say, I carry a gun to school because I want to make it there safely, not because I want to hurt somebody. I think that speaks volume for a 13-year-old to be able to say something like that. And I think those are the situations and stories that need to be told. And those are the ones that need to be invested in. And how are we able to make that shift and make that happen?
Gun control is a constant media topic, but there is almost no discussion about the economic and social redistribution programs which have been proven to reduce mass shootings in poor areas.
The investment is not going in the right spaces. They invest so much, so heavily on the policing aspect of it, and they've done that for decades. And it's repeatedly proven to not work or make a difference. Building community together, giving God an opportunity they never seen, taking them off the block, taking them to other spaces, and investing that money and putting money in their pockets and teaching them skills at the same time. And that's the aspect and component that's missing.
The U.S. gun homicide rate is 26 times that of other high-income countries. Their economic inequality is the highest of any nation in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the so-called Club of Rich Countries. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Almost 3 years after he was given the all-clear by pharmacy regulator, the General Pharmaceutical Council, pro-Palestine activist Nazim Ali's fitness to pursue his career as a pharmacist is being questioned again by the same regulator.
A tribunal at the regulator's headquarters here in Canary Wharf, East London, has been tasked with establishing whether or not Mr. Ali's words, such as Zionists are not Jews, which he spoke at a 2017 Al-Quds rally in the British capital, were, quote, objectively anti-Semitic.
The hearing was pushed for by what's collectively known as the Zionist lobby in the UK, pro-Israeli organizations with a penchant for going after pro-Palestine activists.
It's a deliberate sort of attempt at conflating and making the water muddy, as you will, that distinction between anti-Semitism and sort of anti-Zionism or anti-Israel speech. And they're deliberately sort of muddying the water. They're using the IHRA definition, and they're sort of throwing as much as they can to confuse things. And it's a way of sort of silencing speech.
Nazim Ali, a pharmacist of some 30 years, is but one example of how the Zionist lobby weaponizes anti-Semitism to silence critics of Israel. Other recent examples are former Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, former Labour MP Chris Williamson, the rapper Lowkey, and Bristol University professor David Miller. Also present at the hearing, Mr. Ali's family, who have experienced his ordeal with him every step of the way for the past 6 years.
Well, it most certainly hasn't been easy when you see your father plastered over different news outlets online and in print media with headlines and photos that aren't the most flattering, that represent him in a very negative light. I can't go on the record and say that people are lying, per se, but certainly there are many falsities that are out there that have been published against him that cause a lot of frustration. And one day we hope that justice will be served, not only in the courts, but also in the public eye as well.
Just a song? No, you mentioned the word bomb.
Also known for his sharp wit and his stand-up comedy that challenges Muslim stereotypes and anti-Muslim tropes, Mr. Ali took to social media before the hearing, asking his supporters to pray for him to succeed in putting the case against him to rest once and for all. Saeed Pourreza, London.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, BRI, will be held in Beijing in October. Over the past decade, China has signed documents for the co-building the BRI with over 150 countries and 30 international organizations. A total of more than 3,000 cooperation projects under the initiative has delivered nearly $1 trillion of investment and generated a strong growth across partner countries. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times noted, this year marks the 10th anniversary of the proposal of the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI. Over the past decade, Africa has emerged as a prime example of how the BRI has delivered tangible benefits to both China and Africa, fostering closer ties between the two sides. The remarkable progress can be seen in numerous infrastructure projects undertaken by Chinese companies, the increasing investments in Africa, the growing China-Africa trade, and the strengthening of people-to-people exchanges. The people-to-people exchanges between China and Kenya have laid a solid foundation since the time of legendary Chinese navigator Zheng He's voyages to the coast of East Africa. With the strong driving force of jointly building the breed, the friendly exchanges between the two countries are expected to deepen further. Various sectors in Madagascar generally welcome the BRI and believe that the cooperation between China and Madagascar under the framework of the BRI meets the development needs of Madagascar and truly achieve shared benefits. Among them, President Andry Rajoelina's high evaluation of the BRI has left a deep impression on them. He stated that China is a reliable and important partner for Madagascar's development, and Madagascar's determination and confidence in actively participating in the construction of the Belt and Road Initiative will not change. In September last year, President Rajoelina personally attended the inauguration ceremony of the rehabilitation project of the National Road 5A and drove smoothly on the newly repaired road. The cooperative construction of the BRI has not only effectively promoted policy, communication, trade, facilitation, infrastructure, connectivity, and financial integration, but also promoted people-to-people communication between China and Africa. The exchanges and communication between the two sides have continued to expand, enhancing mutual understanding and friendship, and laying a solid foundation for friendly relations between the two countries. Madagascar is among the first African countries to sign the BRI with China. The BRI has brought enormous influence to countries along the route since it was proposed 10 years ago. Madagascar is an island country in the Indian Ocean. It possesses abundant natural gas resources. Madagascar's offshore oil resources are very rich, and it also has a good strategic location advantage. And there is great potential for cooperation with China in oil refining and port development. In particular, the port can facilitate the transportation of goods from southern Africa and support the establishment of cement plants and aluminum mines. In fact, Madagascar is not poor at all. On the contrary, it is very rich with abundant underground resources. There are no traps in the BRI. On the contrary, for some developing countries, especially some emerging economies, the BRI presents a very good development opportunity. China has its own development planning, and it develops its plans in a coherent manner, which some countries do not. This coherence has also brought great opportunities for China's development. The BRI is a win-win project, which is very different from the narratives by the Western countries, who always talk about conspiracy theories. Western countries put forward the so-called debt trap theory to try and hinder the development of these developing countries. There is no room for any conspiracy. Meanwhile, China Daily wrote, China will host in October the third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, the most highlighted event to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Belt and Road Initiative. The forum in Beijing will also be an important platform for various parties to discuss high-quality cooperation in jointly building the Belt and Road, Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said recently. China is maintaining communication with various parties on preparations for the forum, Wang told a daily news conference. Focusing on boosting connectivity, the initiative aims to provide a platform for global economic cooperation and inject fresh impetus into the development of various countries as well as global economic growth, he said. Over the past decade, China has signed cooperation documents on the BRI with more than 150 countries and more than 30 international organizations. The initiative has galvanized nearly $1 trillion of investment globally and created more than 3,000 projects. Wang said that the BRI has become the most welcomed global public good as well as the largest platform for international cooperation. The full implementation of BRI transportation projects could increase global real income by 7/10 to 2.9% and could help lift 7.6 million people out of extreme poverty and 32 million people out of moderate poverty globally by 2030, the World Bank has estimated. Programs under the initiative also actively fulfill environmental responsibility by carrying out ecological and environmental governance as well as biodiversity conservation, Wang said. According to Wang, China has signed more than 50 cooperation documents on ecological and environmental protection with relevant parties and has launched Belt and Road partnerships on green development with 31 countries. China will take the third forum as an opportunity to work with the international community to sum up experiences and draw a new blueprint to continue to promote high-quality construction of the Belt and Road. Also, recently, Wang announced that in accordance with law, China will impose reciprocal visa restrictions on some U.S. individuals involved in spreading rumors of forcible assimilation in Tibet and those who have long meddled in Tibet-related issues. The countermeasure came after the U.S. regime announced imposition of visa restrictions on Chinese officials over the alleged forcible assimilation of Tibetan children in boarding schools recently.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. This is Arab English Radio, and you're listening to You Station. I am Bita.
And I'm Asma, once again.
If you are in our sweet, sweet home.
Yeah. Ever since we were kids, I'm so sure that you have had the same experience, and the audiences. And guys, I'm just so sure that what I'm going to say is just the same story that has happened to many of you.
Yeah.
When I was a kiddo, we had this house of my grandparents. We went there, and then all the kids together. And then back in time, we were too much of kids, you know, not like right now.
Nice.
Just one, two, or three. No, we were like this bunch of kids together. And then I had some kids of my own age. Among them, there was a cousin of mine. She was just the same as my age, 1 year older than me. Now, the thing is that she was always on my nerve. How? Well, she started to show off even about the the shoes she was wearing.
Come on.
At that age, right now, when I just look back and I just see her behavior, I say, what happens to a girl, to a six-year-old girl, to be that pompous?
Yeah, I know. Because
how
I had
come?
The same experience. And unfortunately, I wasn't born in a kind of crowded family that there were a lot of kids. No, it wasn't like that. I was...
So you were like the other generation.
Yeah, the other side. I was the first kid in my family from both sides, my parents and my father and my mother. And for 8 years, there was no one around me. Yeah, I was an only child.
I don't know
child.
If it's a blessing or if it's
I don't know
not
either.
A blessing.
I don't know either. So, you know, I was a pure only child. Okay.
So only.
So lonely. And when I just went to school, it was kind of new world to me. Just a lot of people and my age, mm-hmm. and I saw them. And there was a friend of mine, and she was always showing off about, I don't know, her siblings, her tablet, cell phone.
Yeah.
At that time,
yeah.
having a tablet was something kind of like a blessing that not all of the people and none of the kids have the chance to have a tablet.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she was like, okay, I'm so rich, and I traveled to that country, to this country, and, you know, it was meaningless for me at that age, whatever
yeah.
she was telling me. And I was like, maybe she is trying to catch my attention or something like that because she wants me to be friends with her. But after a kind of long time, I just figured out that people are evaluating themselves by these kind of things, by showing off the things that they may not have.
Yeah, well,
and
you know,
this is the point.
Now we talked about the time
yeah.
when we were kids and teenagers. Just imagine, as we grew older and we came into society with older people, we saw that, okay, it does not cease to exist. It not only stops to exist, but also it starts to grow in another format.
Yeah.
Now you can see many grown-ups who just show off to each other. At the age of 40, I don't know, 50, 60, whatever age they have, they do not learn the fact that whatever you have, maybe it's a blessing, maybe it's a test, whatever
yeah.
that you have, is not just a thing that's going to be eternal for you. You're not going to take it with you to the grave.
And you know, sometimes showing off is not about the things that you have. It's
yeah.
about the things that you don't, but you wish for to have.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the inferiority complex. That
yeah.
we have in just psychological aspects, and we talk about it, that you feel inferior, and because of this feeling inferior, you want to prove that you are superior to other people, to yourself.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this is something really sad that I see, especially in some people on social medias. You know, this is something really common in social medias, that people show a picture of them themselves that they don't have,
yeah.
but they wish to have.
You actually are pointing at the very reasons of why people show up.
Yeah.
And it's very true. Sometimes it comes out of the lacks that you feel deep down. And it's very sad. So before we penetrate into some more reasons, let's go for a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Okay, so we're talking about this showing off things that people show off about the things that they don't have. I wish we could show off about the time that we have in Youth Station, but unfortunately, this is the only thing that we always don't have, you know? Always talking about these beautiful things, and by the way, this is Youth Station. So.
Yes, and we're here talking about pompous people who
exactly.
show off all the time, and they are these hated people everywhere.
They are, but
nobody likes them.
But sometimes you feel pity for these people. That
of course, the first thing that gets into your mind
exactly.
is that, for example, when I see women feeling so happy about the gold or the piece of jewelry they have bought,
this is
and
foolish.
Then they start to show off in front of their,
yeah.
I don't know, in their communities, they start to just brag about the things they have. The first thing that gets into my mind is pity, because I just feel like there is something somewhere in her life that is missing, and she tries to fill that void with her love for the jewels or for the gold or for anything.
You know, actually, we were counting some of the reasons of this behavior of showing off that I mentioned, this inferiority complex, and right now you told me just one of the reasons, that you're trying to feel something. And whenever the point of view of your life is so materialistic, I think showing off is somehow more highlighted. Because you are expressing the values and the priorities of your life into things that they don't matter, but you put your value in that thing.
Exactly.
Things, like the gold, like money. And unfortunately, the actually trend is going in that way.
Yeah.
That the more money you have and the more you're showing off the money you have, you're loved by other people.
Yeah, you are a much up-to-date person.
Exactly.
But that's not true. Well, the concepts have changed so much. The other reason I could mention is the shallowness of their brain. You know, some people really, really, really do not have a school of thought for themselves.
Yeah.
They go without thinking. I am really much sorry for saying that, but unfortunately, some people would just accept it for themselves, not to elevate themselves with new thoughts, new ideas, with growing up, learning new stuff, you know, because you see, among those friends who just show off to each other about the things they have studied, just imagine, they show off about the things they have learned recently. There are some other people who would show off about the things they have because they do not have any other thing to talk about.
Yeah.
You know?
I know what you mean. And another thing is that sometimes you are communicating with other people, the people that are not in as the same class as you are.
Yeah.
By class, I mean maybe financial class or social class. And you, and this lack of yours that you feel in your life is somehow more emphasized, more highlighted. And you try to be someone else.
Yeah, you try to bring yourself up to their level, and that would actually kill you, I suppose.
This is sad.
So sad, so depressing, and so annoying, but unfortunately we see a lot of it nowadays. There's a lot of it back in there. See, there are too many reasons for that, for people to start showing off. But then what's the cure?
I think curing these kind of people is really difficult. Because,
do you think such people would... I mean, as personally myself, usually when I look at them, I say, still, my cousin is the same girl. She has not changed.
They won't change.
So from the age 6 that I just saw her more and more, up until now that we do not see each other and we see each other just out of a blue moon, even right now, she feels the same girl. So when I just see her, I make sure that I just, it has become my belief after seeing her that there's no way for people to get cured out of this disease of showing off and bragging about the things they have.
Actually, it's a bit harsh to tell me that there is no way, but I have to admit that because, you know, I have a friend in university that she's always showing off everything. You know, she is somehow close to me, and she tells me her difficulties and problems and so on. And once she told me something that was really interesting for me. She told me that I'm tired of pretending whatever I'm not, always pretending I'm happy, always pretending I'm rich. She just told me that even I'm pretending for my parents. And it was really dark for me, too.
Yeah. So there's another reason, depression. Depression makes you go for showing off and boast about the things you have. Yes, we're still talking about pompous people in Youth Station. Well, maybe we have mentioned these guys a lot in Youth Station. Maybe there have been many topics that we brought them into those topics because, you know, these guys are being so conspicuous nowadays. They are very much dominant, you know, because they can show themselves everywhere. And there is this media which has made everything pretty easy for them. They do not have to see other people to just show off. They put the photos and the videos in their pages, and then everything is done.
Exactly.
So they can get to what they want, and then they get the comments, they can get the crying of other people. I don't know if they would feel happy or not, but there's another reason for that, which is they show off by their things, which are materialistic, of course, and mostly. They use it as a sort of distraction. You know, they want to distract themselves from the real life they have, as in a remedy. They do not want to believe what they're living in, and then they use this method as a strategy to just fight against what they're living in reality.
And then after a time, you know, it will become their habit.
There is another aspect to this showing off. Back in time, or maybe even as in a religious aspect, from the religious point of view, people were showing off about the prayers they do.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And about the things they did. I mean, the charity stuff. We see that right now even. People pretend like they care for other people. They go for charity. But what happens actually behind the curtain is just the otherwise.
I know. And there are these kind of people that they're acting and pretending like, oh, I care about the poor people and the poor kids that are in the street. I don't know, the child labor. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thoughtful, as you see, you know. And I like that. And unfortunately, this is only a game for them.
Exactly.
To catch your attention, to have more attention. Yeah. Whenever someone is showing up for you, if you act like, oh my gosh, really, wow, or something like that, you are giving what they want. Okay.
Exactly.
So you have to stop it. Sometimes you have to, this is all you have in your life. This is all your life is. I don't know, showing off your car, your luxury car, your luxury life. Life is not all.
And trust me, you're not going to take it with you to the grave. The only thing that comes with you to the grave is your pure heart, is whatever goodness you have done to the entire humanity, is with the nice thinking that you have shared with other people. It is with the sparkles that you have shared
in
the world of human beings.
You know,
the care that you have for them.
Sometimes this actually pure heart that we see from other people is, again, showing off. So the intention really matters here.
Yeah, the
you
intention,
have to be pure intentionally.
And it's pretty clear, you know, the one that has got a good intention is totally clear from the one who does not have, who's just showing off with it,
so
who's just trying to brag about it and boast about it while it does not exist. And something for the record, to gist it all up, I would say that there's this verse in the Holy Book of Quran that says, "Inna akramakum 'indallahi atqakum." That means the noblest of you before Allah is the most righteous of you. So there's nothing to brag about unless your good deeds that you have done in God's eyes, not for people. With good intention, just the way you just said it. So I guess that makes it all.
Yeah, and let me add this sentence that you have to have the attention of Allah Almighty instead of the attention of people. If you are thinking you're that kind of person who, you know, have a strong urge to have the other people attention, then you are doing something wrong
in
your life.
Exactly. You must just seek to gain his interest.
Exactly.
That's the only thing, with pure intention, of course.
Yeah.
So thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.